Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna. So that's going to be our theme, remembering Lord Krishna. And we'll read from texts 13 and 14 of Chapter 2. The person speaking in Chapter 2 is Uddhava. Who is Uddhava? You know who is Uddhava?
Krishna's effulgence.
Advisor.
Krishna's advisor. Yes, I'll say some things and you can probably remember. When Krishna was residing in Mathura with Balaram, he left. Akura took him to Mathura to take part in the festival that Kamsa had planned, the festival to kill Krishna. And Krishna killed Kamsa. So Krishna and Balaram stayed for some time in Mathura. But while Krishna was in Mathura, Krishna knew that the residents of Vrindavan were feeling great separation from him. And it became too painful, their separation from him. So Krishna decided to send who? Uddhava. What did he do? Krishna wrote a letter to the gopis. My dear gopis, I know that you're missing me, and I'm missing you. As much as you are feeling the pain of separation, I am feeling the pain of separation from you. But I have 3 or 5 more demons I have to kill. And very soon I will come. Very soon I will come. And we can again be together and enjoy happy pastimes with one another. Very soon I will come. But Krishna sent that message to the gopis with Uddhava. That was in Mathura. When Uddhava went to Vrindavan and he saw and experienced the quality of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, he was overwhelmed. Uddhava, especially the gopis, especially Srimati Radharani, this wonderful section where Radharani, when Uddhava was reading the letter from Krishna to the gopis, Radharani was over elsewhere and there was a bumblebee, and she began scolding the bumblebee. You unreliable messenger of an unreliable master, get out of here. I don't want to pay any attention. I don't trust your master, and therefore I don't trust you. Leave me at once. And then she began speaking badly about Krishna. Krishna this, Krishna that, Krishna this, Krishna that, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And the bumblebee went away. Oh, bumblebee, please come back. Don't deliver that message to Krishna. Krishna is wonderful. Krishna this. Krishna is wonderful. Krishna this. Krishna that. And Uddhava, seeing Radharani is so absorbed in love for Krishna, she doesn't even know where she is, who she's talking to, what's going on. She's just so absorbed in love for Krishna. He thought, let me take some
dust and place the dust of the gopis' feet upon my head, minister of the Yadu dynasty, who am I? I'm this fool compared to them. They're so exalted. But if I ask them, can you please place your feet upon my head? These are village girls. They'll feel, you're the minister of the Yadu dynasty. We can't do that. That would be a big offense. So as to not disturb them, I will undergo austerities for a long time so I can take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan so the gopis can walk on me and place their lotus feet and the dust of their lotus feet upon their head. Or maybe just when walking by, the dust will turn and some particles of dust will settle on my blade of grass head, and then I'll be benedicted. So right by the side of Kusum Sarovar, those of you that have been to Vrindavan and Govardhan Hill, there's a temple for Uddhava where he was engaged in austerities. And on the other side, when your feet are really tired going all the way around Govardhan Hill, is Uddhava Kund, and a very nice pastime took place there also with Uddhava. And the queens of Dwarka. That was in Mathura. And then Krishna went to Dwarka. When Krishna went to Dwarka, Uddhava was Krishna's advisor. Uddhava was so intimate with Krishna that Krishna would ask him advice. Uddhava, what do you think I should do? And whatever Uddhava said, that's what Krishna would do. Of course, Krishna was the puppeteer and Uddhava was the puppet, and Krishna was the ventriloquist speaking through Uddhava. But so intimate. So intimate. And vastly knowledgeable in the scripture and extremely wise, but mostly outside of Vrindavan, the most intimate associate of Krishna. It is said by our acharyas that the reason Uddhava was chosen to take that message to the gopis was because Krishna wanted to elevate Uddhava to the platform of the residents of Braj through that association, because that's how one becomes qualified with Braja Prema, is through the association of the residents of Vrindavan, or those who have such a mood of the residents of Vrindavan. And other than that, one can't enter into that mood. One cannot understand even. Kunti couldn't understand the love of Mother Jasoda, although she had the love of Mother also. But she saw Krishna with awe and reverence. She saw him as super soul, personified, moving about in the world. That's pretty incredible. Vision, imagine. Super soul, externally manifested, moving about in the world. That's astonishing. But to her, that was easy. Astonishing was the love of Mother Jasoda. So, Uddhava when Krishna had decided that his pastimes, his purpose for coming into this world, or purposes, plural, for coming into this world had been fulfilled, he had annihilated the demons, he had given protection to the devotees, and he had spoken Bhagavad Gita. He established once again the proper understanding of religious principles, religious teachings. So Krishna's pastimes were completed. He was ready to leave. So what did he do? He confided in Uddhava, I'm going to leave. And when I leave, it's going to get very bad, real fast. So I want you to be safe. So I want you to go to where the devotees of Naranarayan are in the mountains. Associate with them and you'll be okay. You'll be sheltered and safe and protected. Go at once. This is what I want you to do. Uddhava didn't want to leave Krishna. And the thought of Krishna's departing from the world was devastating because he's so attached to Krishna. And Krishna gave him an order that was difficult to fulfill, but he then tried, but he didn't even make it. He got part way there and I can't bear the separation of Krishna, so he went back. But Krishna had gone. He had gone from Dwarka. So he began searching, imagine, searching the earth planet for Krishna. And he searched and he searched and he searched and finally he found Krishna. A very beautiful scene that's described. In a forest, near the river Jamuna, Krishna, it's a beautiful painting depicting this. Krishna is reclining, leaning back on the large trunk in like the lap of a banyan tree, with long arms spread down to his knees, beautiful lotus eyes, his golden colored dhoti spread before him. Krishna! Uddhava ran and fell at the feet of Krishna, crying and crying, I couldn't go. I couldn't bear your separation. Krishna was very pleased to see Uddhava, even though he didn't do what he asked him to do. And in that scene that's described here in the third canto, it's the setting or the circumstance surrounding the Uddhava Gita that comes in the 11th canto. And Krishna begins speaking. Uddhava asks questions, Krishna gives answers. The Uddhava Gita is taking place. So, first canto, we find Vidura leaves, right, chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home, that chapter. Just in the very beginning, Vidura left the royal palace when he was insulted by Duryodhana. And then the first verse just says, he came back after so many years to Hastinapur to deliver Dhritarashtra. Doesn't mention it more, but it mentions it again in the third canto, because the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka, they heard it. So then they asked, can you tell us more? When Vidura left, what did he do? Where did he go? And I understand that he met Uddhava. Whoa! Uddhava's up there and Vidura is up there. If those two met, they must have had wonderful conversation. Can you tell me what they spoke about? Please? In detail? Shonika's like a milkman. And Sutta's like a cow giving milk. He knows how to get every drop of milk because of his enthusiasm for receiving that nectar from Sutta, which he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. So, Vidura poses questions in the first chapter, and then Uddhava begins to give his replies in the second chapter. But it's not just a reply, it's an ecstatic expression of his love for Krishna. And what is Uddhava's love for Krishna? Well, we're going to hear it. he's deeply knowledgeable, and he's deeply emotionally absorbed in love for Krishna. He's so absorbed in love for Krishna that when Vidura finishes asking his questions, Uddhava tries to speak. He tries to speak, but he can't speak. Because he's, according to what our acharyas describe, he's gone to the spiritual world. He's in Goloka Vrindavan, although his body's right there. He's so absorbed in thought of Krishna. He's with Krishna, who left. But he wants to serve Vidura. So he tries to bring his consciousness from Goloka Vrindavan to this plane in order to serve Vidura. But his eyes are streaming with tears and his body is stunned. His voice is choked. He can't speak. He can't move. He's paralyzed. Out of ecstatic love for Krishna, just thinking about Krishna. Somehow, he manages to regain composure. He begins speaking. That's the scene. And he speaks unrestricted emotion. His first thing is, how unfortunate is anyone who had association with Krishna and now is bereft of his association. So he speaks about the lila of Krishna's departure. He doesn't describe the incidents, he describes the emotion. So connect that with Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 7, where Krishna is describing one who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and his activities doesn't take birth again. Who knows that verse? You know that verse? Starts Janma Karma. Do you know the meaning? No. Okay. You know what Janma means? You know what Janmastami is, right? What's Janmastami? That's the Janma of Krishna on the eighth day. Ashta is eight. Janma is birth. The pastime of Krishna is birth on the eighth day of the moon. Janma. So, Janma is birth or appearance, and karma. You know what karma is, right? What's karma? Huh? What's the translation? If you were to give a meaning of the word karma, karma means? Don't know. Activity. When you work, that's karma. And this also means reaction to work. But in Krishna's case, his activity is transcendental. Janma, karma, cha. Cha is a conjunction, it means and. Janma, karma, cha. Me divyam. Divyam? Divya? Divine. Divyam. Transcendental. Those who understand the transcendental nature of my janma and my activity won't take birth again in this material world. So Uddhava is explaining the transcendental nature of Krishna's disappearance. Because Krishna is neither born nor dies. Krishna is transcendental. But he has lila, where he appears and he disappears. And Uddhava understands the transcendental nature. But he's not only, you know, he's not only smart, he's absorbed in deep realization and attachment to Krishna. And he's disclosing the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and his activities. The Lord appeared in this mortal world by his internal potency, Yogamaya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even those proud of their opulence, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. So he's describing Krishna's position is adored even by the Lord of Vaikuntha. He's the supreme personality of Godhead, even amongst his various expansions. He's the original and all-attractive supreme aspect of the supreme, of God. Thus, Krishna's transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. It's poetic. Ornaments generally enhance the beauty of something. Nice garland. Tilak.
Kuntimala.
So, some ornaments. Somebody's going to a social function, so they dress very nicely, and maybe a necklace or something. The ornament is meant to beautify the object, but the nature of Krishna is he enhances the beauty of the ornament. He's the ornament of ornaments. That's Uddhava's appreciation. Then, this morning's verse. All of that was just to get you ready for this morning's verse. Text 13. All the demigods from the upper, lower, and middle universal planetary systems assembled at the altar of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. What's the Rajasuya sacrifice? Not sure?
Yeah,
Raja means?
King.
So when Maharaj Yudhisthira was installed as the emperor, there was a big festival. And when the guest of honor was Krishna. So one of the things that the Rajasuya Yajna was that it's part of the tradition is in the assembly, who is the most respectable, honored, superlative personality in the whole assembly? So Krishna was honored in that way. Shishupal didn't like that. When he spoke up, he didn't like it. And he got checked at the Rajasuya sacrifice. But when that Rajasuya sacrifice was held, here it is in the third canto, Maharaj Yudhisthira was so elevated that the demigods themselves came. And when the demigods themselves saw Krishna, oh, here's what they thought. After seeing the beautiful bodily features of Lord Krishna, they all contemplated that he was the most dexterous creation of Brahma, the creator of human beings. Well, Prabhupada makes it very clear in the purport. Brahma didn't create Krishna. Krishna created Brahma. Let's get this straight. But Krishna is so amazing that even the demigods are bewildered when they see Krishna. And this is described in the first verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dhamna svena sadana rasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. No, the Muyanti yatsurayaha. Muyanti yatsurayaha. Even the great demigods, they're bewildered. Who is Krishna? Although they're devotees of Krishna, they're influenced by the deluding potency to some degree, not to the degree that we are, but to some degree. When they see Krishna, they can't fathom. But what they were appreciating, how beautiful is Krishna? Like the previous, the ornament of ornaments. Brahma outdid himself. When he created wonderful things, this is the superlative of his wonderful things. There is nothing that surpasses the beauty and attractiveness of Krishna, in other words. They were marveling. And in the demigods, we hear the description that why do people want to go to the heavenly planets? Because there is such opulence, opulence and beauty and wealth and exquisite features and long duration of life and somarasa and yummy. Let's go there. And then those that reside there and those that are in charge there, when they see the beauty of Krishna, any beauty that we have here is nothing compared to that beauty. So they're thinking Brahma outdid himself, the best of Brahma's creations, although he's not the creation of Brahma. And just for sake of appreciation, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada was addressing a certain audience. What was his audience? The world. The world of people in Kali Yuga that know nothing about nothing, but they think they know something about everything. From living in New York, that's one of the things that I understand about the mentality of New Yorkers. They not only think they know something about everything, they know everything about everything. Just ask them. We're well informed. We read the New York Times. We know what's going on. But and so the emphasis that Prabhupada is making, both in the translation and in the commentary, is two things. One is already mentioned. Krishna is the source of Brahma, not Brahma is the source of Krishna. Krishna creates Lord Brahma. In fact, Krishna expands himself as the Mahavishnu, who expands himself as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who generates a lotus flower atop of which Lord Brahma appears. So it's even remote. Krishna creates Brahma, not Brahma creates Krishna. But the other is that the beauty of Krishna is superlative. There was nothing comparable to the bodily features of Lord Krishna when he was present in this world. He speaks of the blue lotus flower. The most beautiful object in the material world may be compared to the blue lotus flower or the full moon in the sky. But even the lotus flower and the moon were defeated by the beauty of the bodily features of Lord Krishna, certified by the demigods. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur had a different audience. He wasn't so much addressing the world, although he didn't have a printing press where he was having his writings distributed worldwide. He was addressing those devotees who want to dive deeply into the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he renders this a little differently. it's a poetic rendering that at the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhisthira, all the people of the universe, seeing the form of Lord Krishna, which created auspiciousness in all directions, considered that the skill of the Creator in making the most beautiful objects in the recent universe was nullified completely at that time. Here's his commentary translated into English. In this verse, Uddhava reminds Vidura, you have directly witnessed the great auspiciousness of Krishna. It's indicated within the verse. You have seen, now here's my description of what I've seen. All the people within the three worlds, including Brahma and Indra, considered that today, in this universe, the skill of the Creator in constructing the recent variegated world had all been nullified. Just by seeing the beauty of Krishna's limbs. There is now disgust with the creations of the blossoming blue lotus, lamp, black ointment. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. There's no specific mention, but it's anjana. It's an ointment that's applied by some people to make themselves more beautiful. The blue sapphire. Ooh, blue sapphire. Put it in some museum somewhere and show it off. A royal jewel of some kingdom somewhere. Blue sapphire. Or the rain cloud. Seeing the beauty of Krishna's face, what is the use of the moon, the lotus? Ooh. Compared to Krishna. Completely dismissed, nullified. Then, text 14. The women of Vraja, after pastimes of laughter, rasas, and exchanges of glances, followed him with their eyes when he left. And thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. See what he's doing. Krishna's left. Now he's describing what it was to be with Krishna, how beautiful was Krishna to the demigods, what to speak of the gopis. And when Krishna left, they were stunned. And he was stunned by the absence of Krishna, but he's so absorbed in the thought of Krishna that Krishna's with him, and he's with Krishna by his absorption of thought in Krishna. And he's describing the mood of the gopis. So now here's Prabhupada's purport. In his boyhood at Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was notorious for, as a teasing friend in transcendental love to all the girls his age. His love for them was so intense that there was no comparison to that ecstasy. And the damsels of Braja were so much attached to him that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. So as Brahma and Shiva saw Krishna, such a beautiful creation of Brahma. The gopis weren't thinking creation of Brahma, they were thinking Krishna. Lord Krishna finally admitted his defeat before the transcendental affection of the gopis and declared that he was unable to repay them for their unalloyed affection. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished by the Lord's teasing behavior when Lord Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and used to follow him with their eyes and minds. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. No one could excel him, even in the dealing of loving exchanges between boys and girls. And that's marvelous in this world. But Krishna put that to shame. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. So, Uddhava is again marveling at the love of the gopis, and he's also marveling at the intensity of the love of Krishna for the gopis. But the love that Krishna shows for the gopis is in the form of pastimes of laughter, pastimes of humor, pastimes of teasing, pastimes of exchanges of glances. And then Krishna leaves. And when Krishna leaves, the gopis follow him with their eyes. And in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he says, with their eyes were acting like minds. Their mind was absorbed in Krishna through their eyes. Very poetic. By the attraction of the gopis for Krishna, the attraction of the gopis for Krishna was much greater than all others within the universe, including Brahma and Indra. Because Krishna did not respect these devatas as much as he respected the gopis. Having great respect for Krishna after he had respected them by his playful glances and by all rasas accompanied by smiles permeated with love, anurag, pluta, the women of Vraja, whose minds followed him with their eyes, at that moment remaining standing, unable to move at all because of paralysis due to ecstasy. They stopped all activities such as cleaning, smearing cow dung, churning yogurt, and serving food. Even in the midst of doing activities, if they happened to see him suddenly, they remained motionless, not completing their chores. This love, which astonished the whole universe, including Krishna himself, and the bewilderment it created in the women of Vraja, arose from the profusion of their prema by repeated descriptions of Krishna's human pastimes, the eternal position of his abode of Goloka, Mathura, and Dwarka, compared to the rising and setting of the sun, is suggested. So, the hearing from Uddhava is such a great fortune, because though we can maybe try to imagine what it's like to be Krishna conscious. But here's a person who's Krishna conscious. He can't think of anything but Krishna. And because he has heard all these things, and more, even in his case, he's experienced all these things. What he's giving us an internal picture of his Krishna consciousness. It's his heart. It's his absorption in thought of Krishna. And he knows Krishna intimately. And he knows the intimacy of love that the gopis feel for Krishna. And he's disclosing that openly. So, our part, just by hearing these nice narrations, then our hearts and our minds can also become attracted to Krishna. We are qualifying ourselves to come to that stage where we may also see Krishna. The demigods saw Krishna, they saw him one way. By getting through the sound vibration, by getting the association of one who has had Krishna's direct association in Vrindavan, then we're getting that benefit, that their association that will help qualify us for that very advanced association of Krishna in Vrindavan. That's how the process works. Krishna, Uddhava is giving us that opportunity because he's qualified in that way. There's several places where the residents of Dwarka, who are with Krishna in Dwarka, they have a sense, a very clear sense, that Krishna is very attached to the residents of Vrindavan. And they have such love for Krishna, they want Krishna to be happy. So they're wishing that Krishna could be with the residents of Vrindavan, but at the same time they don't want to lose Krishna's association. So in order to more deeply appreciate Krishna's love for the residents of Vrindavan, they want to find out from one who has had that association of Krishna in Vrindavan. So Uddhava is one, and even in another way, Rohini is another. Who is Rohini? Yeah.
The mother of Balaram.
The mother of Balaram. And when Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, then, and Kamsa was killed, Krishna, Balaram went with Krishna, Kamsa was killed, so now the husband of Rohini was Vasudev, exactly. So she rejoined her husband. Vasudev sent Rohini to go to be safe with Nanda and Yashoda. But when Krishna returned to Mathura, she returned to Mathura so she could be with her husband. And when Vasudev and all the other members of the Yadu dynasty were transferred by Krishna's arrangement to Dwarka, Rohini went to Dwarka. So Rohini has been spent all these 12 and a half years with Krishna in Vrindavan. So she knows intimately about Vrindavan. But she's over there in Dwarka to be with her husband, Vasudev. So they're regularly asking, Rohini, what's Vrindavan like? Not just like, you know, a travelogue with some photographs. But, you know, the mood of the residents of Vrindavan and Uddhava also, so that they can appreciate the love that Krishna has for the residents of Vrindavan and the love that the residents of Vrindavan have for Krishna and how unique it is. So that's what's happening here in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. Uddhava's remembering Krishna, and he's taking us through that remembrance to Krishna, to absorption and thought of Krishna, and that takes one to Krishna. Okay, so we'll stop there and see if there's any Uddhava Katha and Krishna Katha. Yes?
Krishna is always in Vrindavan, right?
Krishna is always in Vrindavan, right.
So, when he left...
What happened? How did he go to Vrindavan? If he go, or leave, how did he go to Mathura if he's always in Vrindavan?
Yeah, and, like, my question is, if he's always in Vrindavan, then why did the gopis feel so patient?
Okay. So, you want the second one or the first one? Or both?
Second.
Second. Okay. It's Leela. When Krishna, here's what our acharyas describe. Remember when Akura is leaving with Krishna and Balaram on the chariot? And that terrible scene when the gopis are trying to stop Akura from taking Krishna. They grab a hold of the reins of the horses. They place themselves before the wheels of the chariot. They're pulling on the sleeves of Akura. Don't take Krishna away. They're going mad. And Akura leaves. And they're devastated. And the chariot is moving along on its way to Mathura. And Krishna and Balaram ask, can you please stop the chariot? We'd like to take our bath in the river Jamuna before we complete our journey to Mathura. Of course, the chariot driver, sure. So they take their bath, they come back to the chariot. And Akura asks, may I also take bath? And then what happens? When he goes to the river, what does he see?
He sees Krishna.
First he sees Krishna and Balaram. They were just in the chariot, so he goes back to the chariot. They're sitting in the chariot. So he goes back to the river Jamuna. The second time he sees not Krishna Balaram, but Vishnu and Anantashesh. And then he sees the host of demigods and all the personified Vedas. And then he realizes that's who Krishna and Balaram are. He's the supreme personality of Godhead, was the creator of the cosmic manifestation. He offers his prayers. He goes back to the chariot. And there's Krishna Balaram, smiling. Uncle Akura, did you see something? And his answer is, just by seeing you, I'm seeing everything. Let's go to Mathura. So, when Krishna was leaving Vrindavan, he remained in Vrindavan. It was Vasudev Krishna, four-armed Krishna, that feature of Krishna, who went to Mathura. It was the same four-armed Krishna that was appeared in the prison house of Kamsa. Vasudev Krishna. And then Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. When Krishna was carried by Vasudev across the river Jamuna, there's a very interesting incident that happened. It's only sometimes narrated. Krishna slipped out of his hands and fell into the river. Vasudev panicked. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Oh, here's Krishna. So Vasudev Krishna remained in Mathura, and Swayam Bhagavan Krishna was received by Vasudev and placed by the side of Mother Yashoda. And he lived there for 12 and a half years. Then here comes a Guru taking Swami Bhagavan Krishna out of Vrindavan? Not possible. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So Vasudev Krishna went to Mathura. And Krishna remained in Vrindavan, but he was not visible. So where was he? He was in the heart of all the residents of Vrindavan. Looking, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He's in their heart. He never left Krishna, never left Vrindavan. He remained in the hearts of his pure devotees in Vrindavan. Sometimes he manifests pastimes. But otherwise, he's always in Vrindavan within the hearts of those who are the residents of Vrindavan. He never leaves Vrindavan. That's nice? You got it? Okay. You have another question? Okay.
Like the pure devotees of Krishna, like Vidura, like they don't take like insults upon themselves. Like they don't feel bad if they get insulted. So like why did Vidura leave?
Why did Vidura leave? Did you hear her softly spoken question? I'll repeat it. Devotees never become insulted when they hear harsh words. So why is it that Vidura, when he was insulted with harsh words, he left? He remained. Vidura is a servant. A pure devotee is a servant of Krishna. And they want to do service for Krishna. So he tried to serve Krishna by assisting his elder brother to get it, to like, you know, understand the situation that was being enacted by his own stubbornness and blindness and attachment, and it was getting nowhere. But he kept trying. He kept trying. It reached a point where he realized not only, well, two things. That I've made my best effort and my brother is just not going to move. So I'm wasting my time here. And moreover, secondly, Duryodhan had already shown that he was ready to try to arrest Krishna. He had his soldiers prepare to enter into the assembly and on his indication, charge Krishna, grab Krishna and put him in prison. So what did Krishna do? He smiled and he showed his universal form right in the assembly. Everybody stood back. Krishna withdrew the universal form, smiled again and left. Vidura understood that Duryodhan was capable of anything. He would have done the same thing to him. He would have been a big bloody scene right in the royal palace. So rather than have a big bloody scene right in the royal palace with a fratricidal war, everyone fighting over at each other's, because Duryodhan told his military buddies to go, you know, grab and finish Vidura. So he left. And a third reason is he understood that there's some higher purpose of Krishna. I've been in this contaminating association for so long. Let me become purified. And I would have had to have made this very difficult decision. Actually, it would have been so difficult, but the difficult decision was, I have been maintained by these people, the abominable people, and because of that, when a war does come, I'll have to use my weapons to fight with them, because on religious principle, I've been maintained by them. So now I have to assist them in a time of need. But I don't want to do that, fight with these on behalf of these people. So it's described in the Bhagavatam that when he left the assembly, he didn't say a word. He didn't say, "I'm leaving." He just got up, took his bow and arrow, placed them by the side of the door symbolically, meaning, "I'm not going to take part in this battle that's going to take place between cousin brothers. I don't have to choose sides." He felt relieved of that decision. And another reason is it gave him an opportunity to hear whatever Krishna's plan was. It's not like he knew what Krishna's plan was, but because his purpose was purification, then the other end of purification, he would have the opportunity to hear from Maitreya, a great saintly person. So if you were in that situation, what would you do? If you knew the opportunity to hear from a great saintly person is perhaaps awaiting me over here, and over here is this stubborn brother, that elder brother, that just can't hear anything of good advice. He's bringing the destruction to the whole family. Murder and intrigue and insulting Draupadi, and now even he'll deny Krishna, who's just asking for a peaceful settlement. Not a difficult choice. So he didn't leave because, "I've been insulted. I'm leaving." That wasn't. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj, talking about like Uddhava remembering Krishna and also like the gopis and the Vrajavasis remembering Krishna. So, remembering Krishna, Krishna is present, but the intensity of love that the Vrajavasis and the gopis have for Krishna was so strong and intense. So, is there any difference in the way they realize Krishna in that separation? How to understand that, Maharaj?
The way? Is there any difference between them and what else?
Between Uddhava and...
Sure. There's a difference in intensity according to... Ask Uddhava. As far as he's concerned, the intensity of the love of the gopis is worshipable. He aspires for that himself. Does that answer your question? They're the topmost. Anyone else? Yes?
When Krishna left Vrindavan, it was Vasudev Krishna who went ahead. So when the Krishna was present with Pandavas, it was Vasudev Krishna.
That's right.
It was the Krishna.
Yes.
Okay. And Maharaj is saying that Kunti was seeing Krishna as super soul. How was Arjuna seeing Krishna?
His dearmost friend.
So Arjuna's position was higher than Kunti?
Yeah, like Kunti. Very similar. But at the same time, with a degree of intimacy, that even Kunti didn't have, because of the degree of intimacy of friendship. Arjuna was Krishna's dearmost friend outside of Vrindavan. Dear most friend. And for that reason, Krishna saw him that way also. Krishna chose Arjuna to receive Bhagavad Gita because his dear most friend. And because of that mood of intimacy and friendship, Arjun could understand. Yes. Here's the microphone. It's a how-to question. How-to?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the class. Maharaj, how to take association of advanced devotees without falling prey to the familiarity issue?
With respect. The antidote for familiarity is respect. So you can say, never disrespect, or never never take for granted or the frame of your question is elevated devotees, so see them as elevated. Just like the deity. The deity is up there, we're down here. Out of respect. Even if we're standing, still they're elevated. Because they're on this nice throne and altar. We don't stand like that, you know, here I am, here's my throne. They're worthy of our respect. And externally, by how we place them, and internally, how we regard them, both. And that's same with the elevated Vaishnavas. Yes?
And I want to make sure, when you are speaking with, when Krishna was brought into from this world, the spiritual world, the gopis, you said gopis were following him with their eyes, how the mind follows them.
Yes.
I'm trying to understand. When Krishna was leaving this planet, he came to Vrindavan?
When Krishna was leaving the planet, he came to Vrindavan?
Yeah, before
he went to a forest. Doesn't say exactly Vrindavan, but it does say a forest and near the river Jamuna, so it could have been Vrindavan. Doesn't say explicitly that I'm aware of. So what's your question? That's it?
Yeah.
Where was it that Krishna was when he spoke Uddhava Gita?
Yeah, he came to see the gopis.
No, doesn't say he came to see the gopis. It says he was in a forest and Uddhava saw him there.
But gopis could see him?
Doesn't say that. Uddhava saw him, but doesn't say anything about the gopis. Seeing him, not seeing him. Doesn't say. And there may be some narration that I'm unaware of that says, and also Krishna visited the gopis. I'm unaware of that. The Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, doesn't describe that. The 11th canto doesn't describe that. Uddhava was there. And Maitreya was eavesdropping. He was listening to the conversation. Those three personalities were there. No gopis. Yes.
Maharaj, I was just wondering, Krishna knows the past, present, and future, right?
Yes, he does.
So I just want to, I don't know how to understand this, but, how does free will play? Everybody has free will, right?
Okay. So, yes.
How does Krishna know, I know he knows the future, but how do I understand that, the free will? And
okay, I got you. I'm very familiar with this question. And you're doing a good job expressing it, also. I was trying to recall the examples, the series of examples that can show the following. If I know, let's say this. Coming up is Ram Nomi, and I'll just assume that you're going to be fasting on Ram Nomi. And when it comes to the feast, you'll take prasadam when it comes to feast time. You know, it's just like, because I know you, you'll take prasadam, you'll fast, and then you'll take prasadam. So that's the future. Now, does that take away your free will? That I know the future. I know that you're going to fast. And I'll know that you'll take prasadam at the end of the day when the feast is served. Knowing something in advance doesn't take away free will. And that's just me. But Krishna, he knows everything. But that doesn't take away, he knows how you use your free will. Or he knows how all living entities, you know, past, present, and future. It doesn't take away their free will that Krishna knows. But Krishna knows. And their free will is also operative. So, you know, you can start splitting hairs and say, well, what if they change their mind? And Krishna will know that too. No, Krishna's omniscience does not inhibit free will in any way. Just like you can go back in time, same thing. I know something happened in that direction of time. And there was some free will that was operating in the past. It doesn't take away the free will because I know it happened in the past or in the future or in present. Free will is operative fully at every moment. And Krishna's omniscience has no limit. They're independent. One doesn't cancel the other. In fact, because of Krishna's omniscience, when we do exercise our free will, Krishna's sanction is also operative. Otherwise, we can free will all we like and nothing's going to happen. And as it's true in the moment, it's true in the future. It's not any nullified now, not nullified in the future, because Krishna knows. And we have free will. Okay? I had this long discussion with somebody about this. I went on for like weeks. They just like couldn't get it. It was yeah, but. Yes.
Let me put the scenario first and I'm going to ask you a question. So, thanks for your class. I understood how stubbornness can destroy family or whatever you want to do it. And also, well, my past experience, I've understood that I get 10% when I hear, and about it goes up to it jumps up to 50% if I associate, trying to understand what I heard and how to practice. But remaining 50% is where I have really practiced to get to the 100%. This is my sort of.
Where's Krishna in the picture?
I'm talking about hearing about Krishna and then.
Okay, but I'm saying, okay, where's the Krishna factor in the picture? But what I've heard so far is your own endeavor, but what about the Krishna factor? Keep going.
What was my thought? Okay. And then the other thing which is going on with me due to conditioning of all my false ego is knowing something about everything, so I feel, okay, I've reached a stage where I know. And then that 50%, I'm not able to go to that 50% which I want really to do it. I don't know whether I put my question, put my thought clearly.
Let's see.
Okay. I heard 10%.
I got, you don't have to say it again. Now, what's your question?
How do I really go there? I just want to get out of
the other 50%. How do you do that? Ah. Krishna. Avyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagami. No. You continue to endeavor and depend on Krishna's mercy. Constant practice and detachment in another portion of Bhagavad Gita. What is that detachment? It's letting go of being the controller and letting Krishna be the controller because he's the controller. But depending upon Krishna's mercy. Let Krishna orchestrate the other 50%. You continue your 50%. Let go of being the controller. What? But then, if I'm not the control, if I'm not in control, then, you know, what's going to happen? And I have to control. That's the other 50%. Krishna's in control. We serve him to our earnest best and depend upon Krishna. It's not just a cute answer, that's the other 50%. We make some endeavor and we rely on mercy. These two factors are the factors in spiritual advancement, spiritual progress. So it's faith in Krishna. There's faith in the process, that's, you know, what I'm giving my endeavor to. But the process is to receive Krishna's mercy. It's to just qualify you to oneself to receive Krishna's mercy. And if Krishna so desires, if Krishna so chooses, he can pick me up. And if Krishna so chooses, he can neglect me. If Krishna so chooses, he can crush me with his embrace. Whatever Krishna wants. But let my mind not budge one inch from the call to be engaged in his unconditional loving service. That's the other 50%. We don't diminish our or increase our endeavor based upon what Krishna does with his 50%. And when we have that qualification, we have Krishna's mercy. We're qualified at least to receive Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's merciful. He may manifest his mercy in a way that, you know, it's not according to our plan. It was supposed to happen like this, and it's happening like that. Krishna, you don't understand that I'm the controller here. You know, it's supposed to be like this, not like that. That's, so Krishna's mercy may come in a way that is not how we were anticipating it would come. And that's okay, because he's the controller. We're the servant. However long it takes, it's a lesson that's worth learning. Yeah, anything else?
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. Bhagavatam speaks only the past tense of Krishna, are these four yugas or before the yugas? But if this doesn't speak, where can I find the past tense of Krishna, even before these four yugas?
Well, the four yugas just cycle. It's spring. And what was before spring? Winter. And what was before winter? Fall. And what was before fall? Summer. And what was before fall? But before summer? Spring. So what was before these four yugas? Four yugas. What was before that? Four yogas.
So the same four yogas repeat?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a good design. The Vedic picture of time is cyclical. I mean, including, you know, you can do the micro or macro, and it's the same, it's cyclical. Each day of Brahma is 1,000 yuga cycles, and his night is of equal duration. And his life is made up of 365 of such days times 100. Times 2 because it's night also. And then that's the annihilation of the universe. And then time winds down. And for the equal duration of creation, there's annihilation. That's the night of creation. And then again creation. So it's just, it's, you know, the macro or micro, it's cyclical. We have our four seasons and they're cycling it. One time around makes 1 year, and so on. What's described in the Bhagavatam is not just within our current four yugas cycling. It goes back to many previous cycles of the four yugas. Many, many, many. It's not keeping track. I mean, like, not numerically, in this particular yuga cycle, this is what happened. It speaks of, you know, Swayambhuva Manu and Chakshusha Manu and this Manu and that Manu. But there's always the four yuga cycles going on within those 71 during each of the 14 manus. Time is cyclical. Yes?
When you went to sleep or rest, how to play the kasam?
Before or during? Yes, it's possible.
How it is?
If you, if during the however many hours that you're awake, let's say maybe something like 18 or something like that, hours of wake, if you're absorbed in a prayerful mood, your thoughts during your dreams will be according to how you conduct your life during waking time. Yes? Yes. That's what our experience says, and that's what Scripture says. I'll share this with you. I was astonished that from February 1st to February 17th, I was strapped on a treadmill called the GBC meeting. And I was chairing the meeting, and from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, it was meetings. I got up in the morning, attended Mangalarti, chanted japa, and got into meetings. Time for breakfast, time for luncheon, and by 7 o'clock in the evening, meetings. 17 days. And it was all very intense. So what happened afterwards? What was I dreaming about afterwards? Exactly the same thing that I was doing, you know, meetings about figuring out this problem and how to arrange that solution and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it went on for days. It was like this thing was strapped on my head and fastened on. And it took like 10 days before I could dream of anything else besides being in meetings. I never dreamed of being in meetings before. So there's an answer to your question. Let your waking hours be prayerful with absorption, and you're dreaming. I've had experience, particularly when earlier periods of my service was as young brahmacharis, we would go out on Harinam Sankirtan for so many hours a day, you know, like 10 hours a day, chanting the holy name, day after day after day. And so, what was in dreams? Kirtan. I'd sometimes wake up, you know, Haribo! Literally with arms, you know, moving in the air. Oh. Yes? Because the mental impression stays. And you then, Prabhupada has described, according to the Vedic picture, your dreams are nothing other than experiencing again on the subtle plane what you've already experienced in waking consciousness. So he gave the example. Supposing in a dream you have a dream of a golden mountain. You can't dream of a... There's no such thing as a golden mountain. But during your waking condition, you've experienced a mountain and you experienced gold, so in your dream you put splice the two together, it becomes a golden mountain. He used that specific example. You can't dream of something that has not been within your experience. So, pray a lot during the day. Sincerely. A lot. Your dreams will be like that too. Yes. Okay. I have to excuse myself. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Pijai.
His Holiness Srila Rupa Maharaj.